This is the Last Rush Hour podcast. I'm your host, Fred Pilot. I'm author of the recently published book, Last Rush Hour, The Decentralization of Knowledge Work in the 21st Century. The book is about how information and communications technology has matured to the point that it's disrupting the 20th century model of when and where knowledge work gets done, which was 8 to 5 in an office that comes with high cost to organizations and requires their members to commute daily to the office, often in stressful time-wasting rush hour traffic. Today, knowledge work, analyzing data, reading reports, writing and producing presentations, planning and strategizing and collaborating with colleagues and clients can be done anywhere with a reliable internet connection and whenever one can think, communicate, and be creative and productive. Knowledge workers in their organizations have begun migrating out of commute and office space. People are increasingly working some or all of the time in home offices, coffee shops, or in co-working facilities in their communities. Some organizations have gone completely virtual, operating without dedicated office space. Closely related to this trend is the increasing attention on achieving optimal work-life balance and devoting more time to health-promoting activities, such as sustained exercise, getting enough sleep, and eating a healthy diet. At a time when healthcare costs are rising unsustainably and we're paying more for medical care and health insurance due to preventable lifestyle-related chronic conditions. Each podcast will feature a conversation with a notable individual influencing and driving this mega shift in how we work in the 21st century. This podcast will feature Jeff McLennan, and I'm going to go and introduce Jeff for our audience. Jeff McLennan, he has recently left state service. Let me first introduce his education. He completed an undergraduate degree at the University of California with a double major in economics and political science. In 1986, Jeff completed a master's degree in public administration at California State University, Sacramento, with a focus on the psychology of employee motivation. As I mentioned, he recently retired from a career in California State Service after working for the State Senate and State Executive Branch agencies. He held the title of Special Assistant to the Executive at the California Department of General Services, and he served as the chairman of the State Telework Advisory Group at the Department of General Services, which we're going to discuss in this program today. And he was also served, and I think Jeff, correct me if I'm wrong, you're still holding this title, President of the American Society for Public Administration, Sacramento chapter?
I am now. I completed that after 4 years. I am the immediate past president and enjoying all the freedoms that brings.
Okay. Jeff's present objective is to protect the integrity of public service while seeking innovative solutions and public-private partnerships for more efficient public services. Jeff is concerned that the silent majority of civil servants are not recognized for their excellent performance and adaptability. He also believes that innovations in government processes, such as teleworking and collapsing organizational charts, are the only way to keep the promise of quality government in an era of accountability. His recent publications include articles on succession planning, quality control, and technology-driven workforce changes. Jeff, welcome to the podcast today.
Thank you, Fred. I'm glad to be here.
Okay, well, let's go right into it. I wanted to start out with a few questions. Tell us more. I introduced you in terms of your role with the state, but would you tell our listeners a little more about what your role was with the Telework Advisory Council and when you got that up and running?
Yes, thank you. Excellent question. I was in my worker cubicle at the State Department of General Services, where I just recently retired. And of those 25 years of DGS, I also had eight with the Department of Real Estate as an investigator, and another several with local government. And I noted that there was a group called the Telework Advisory Group. And a gentleman who's still active in the area lives as a Davis resident. His name is David Fleming. And I decided to attend one of these meetings, of course, on my own time, and find out. And there David was leading a small committee of managers and a few executives at the Department of General Services, notably Director Will Bush, who was a teleworker himself at the time. And I noted that the whole push was to get people, you know, out of offices, but more particularly, Caltrans was repairing large parts of Interstate 5 in downtown Sacramento, resulting in significant closure of that highway during commute hours. So an effort was begun, and I volunteered to communicate to all state employees downtown Sacramento to start to telework, consider other ways to work.
And when, what year was this, Jeff? What time frame are we talking about here?
I want to say somewhere in the period of 2006 to 2008.
Okay.
Redirected about 40% of the workforce. It was amazingly effective. 40% of the workforce ended up going to mass transit or working at home or otherwise arranging their schedule away from the downtown Interstate 5 corridor. And there was polling that was conducted by the Department of General Services, namely Jay Tyberski. And Jay was a very effective communication to all sources of state government and state government agencies in the downtown area. And remarkably, there were very few backups, traffic interruptions. People just found another way. I remember the downtown, for those who did have to drive, of course, during the workday, if you had to take a cab or something. I've been a train commuter for the last 15 years of my life using Amtrak, so I wasn't driving a car anyway. But when you had to get around, you called a cab or you shared a car, and you know most of the downtown Sacramento area major streets and thoroughfares was redirected. So that began my, if you will, foot in the door. And then I decided, well, this is interesting, because if we can take one project like this and we can redirect people to their homes, other offices, other telecenters, if you will, then the question bumped me in the head was, well, why don't we make this part of our permanent work life? Why are we drawing people in like bees to the hive when, you know, the hive, or if you will, to use another adage, who moved my cheese? That is, do we really have to come down to a central place every day of the week?
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm not advocating that people don't go to office. I'm not saying that. What I am saying is there may be a new flexible style of work available. And so I got involved with the TAG, and eventually David Fleming retired from state service. In effect, he had already retired, but he came back to help Director Bush on this huge transportation effort, which was, I would think, anywhere getting near 40% of the people to change the way they go to work. I think that's a huge success, but others may disagree. And I was asked to take over leadership of the Telework Advisory Group. The Telework Advisory Group was established per government code actually back about 1986, if I'm correct. I don't have the numbers, but we can get those details later. And the Telework Advisory Group was to, the Department of General Services director was to organize and sustain a policy group that met as necessary to research and develop and otherwise promulgate what you call modern workplace behavior. And teleworking, as it's called then, and I think it's more called virtual work in other terms now, has been sustained. I was able to organize and grow the committee from mostly general services participants to over 20 participants throughout the downtown from various agencies. And I was aware there were very many early adopters of telework that were still out there. So I was able to, if you will, improve communication and increase the whole activity of the telework advisory group. It's interesting to note that many teleworkers were, quote, underground or informal. They had not been discovered. And many of them were legal workers and investigators. So I decided to start a research and development branch of the telework advisory group. We established three research committees. The most notable one was metrics. We needed to know the numbers. We needed to know where people were, how many were participating, how they were participating. We needed to break it down into, understanding variables that drove people or not into teleworking, as we were calling it then. Along came the new administration, and about 2009, the new leadership, Governor Brown's administration, was brought in, and I was eventually replaced by somebody in our training division, which was part of our HR department at General Services. And so that was it for my part. I was not a political appointee. I was a civil servant the entire time, although I was working in the executive office as a high-level policy advisor.
Okay, and then 2011, I believe you helped organize a conference for state managers on telework. Can you tell our listeners what the outcome of that was, and did it increase the adoption of telework among state entities?
It's very interesting you brought that up. Thank you. At Sacramento State University, Cal State, we organized and administered a telework conference, probably the only one on the West Coast. We invited, it was a conference that had national participants. We had people from the University of Washington. We had people from Southern California, all the way from Boston and Calgary, Alberta, Canada, attend this conference. I was the honorary chairperson because, notably, pursuant to code and also tradition, State of California was the first, under David Fleming and others, to have a telework program in place. We were able to get a number of vendors as well as telework experts, including many of David Fleming's associates going way back when, the 70s, who researched telework at that time and saw it as a future of work. We came together. It was a one-day conference. It was quite an experience because I wasn't aware of the network and the infrastructure, if you will, that was necessary. The infrastructure is during the American redevelopment, Economic Redevelopment Act, under the Obama administration, one of the key components was completing and extending the infrastructure of the Internet to all communities, particularly rural communities. And I worked with a fellow at the State Department of Agriculture who was using federal funds to do just that. Say, for example, some of the poorer farming communities in the Central Valley. Well, suddenly people were waking up and realizing, for example, that high school students there were underachieving because they did not have access to the Internet, either at home or at the schools. So that turned on a new light in my head. And here at the conference, leading back to the conference, we had a wonderful woman named Robin Dews, spelled D-E-W-S. She was a chairperson, a director at Calgary Works. And at Calgary Works, the policy was all small businesses and new businesses beyond a certain level, I want to say as little as 10 to 15 employees, had to have a telework variable to their business, which was the government, if you will, a regional government in Canada saying, hey, if you're going to come work here, and Calgary is a huge economic engine in Canada, you have to use the Internet, and you have to use our, if you will, our Internet facilities. So the city and the region of Calgary put in this huge economic investment of cabling and other initiatives to encourage, if you will, electronic working and teleworking in that region. And it was quite a success because not only did it drive their economic engine, particularly with small businesses, but it also allowed workers to be more flexible in how they work. So I came away from the conference with Robin Dews, a big part of Canada actually developing, if you will, a telework effort. And then, of course, across the United States. Telework conference was, yeah.
Wasn't there some research presented at this conference that Kate Lister had done on potential savings to the state in terms of brick-and-mortar state buildings? Because at the time, as you recall, the state was in a severe budget crisis.
Good point, Fred. Yes, Kate is a wonderful person, another pioneer, going back, if you will, to the heritage of David Fleming. She's got at least 20 years of work here, and yes, she did present, again, the data that we were trying to capture. And she indicated, I wanted to say, I'm stretching it now because I don't have the documents in front of me, but there was at least a $2 million saving the first year if the state were to adopt some kind of a telework, if you will, infrastructure to its workforce.
Mm-hmm.
Kate presented that, and it was, I believe there was a radio program in the area where that was presented. And so we had some media attention from Kate's research.
Well, I think you also, didn't you also, when you were with the state, research the idea of creating government co-working facilities in the Sacramento metropolitan area and residential communities where state workers live, recognizing that not everyone has a suitable place to work at home, in their home?
Yes, Fred, thank you. The telework centers were part of the Department of General Services Real Estate Division. It was a project that I was assigned to at the time, and I was working under the director and the deputy director, and we attempted to get state agencies to do exactly that, to collaborate on opening work centers throughout the state. Unfortunately, as you might know, the State Budget Act and the state budget policies are pretty strict in how you can spend money. When you start commingling money, let's say from EDD and Caltrans and general services, of course it makes people nervous because they're responsible for funds from their particular agency and their programs and their purposes. So we weren't able to get too far from that. I might mention there was some early examples of that, and particularly the Franchise Tax Board and the Employment Development Department and the Board of Equalization, and there may have been others, did have some, if you will, one-stop shops, as they were referred to at the time, that involved a collaboration, but I'm not aware that telework was part of that. So we were not able to get that off the ground, but it was tried.
Is there any current effort to do that you're aware of?
I'm not aware that the state has taken any steps towards that. Of course, I've been retired for 9 months, so I can't be absolutely certain. But the Department of General Services Telework Advisory Group, the current coordinator for that is Jay Tyberski, and he is at the Department of General Services. So I think probably Jay could best answer that question.
Okay, thank you. Capitals like Sacramento, Washington, D.C., capital cities, they're really public decision factories where public policy is made, a lot of things are analyzed and processed in order to reach decisions that are public policy. Why are these sprawling metro areas particularly resistant to the decentralization of this decision factory work that they do to the communities and homes where their government staff members live?
Well, that's a really good question, and if I may, I'm going to answer that, but I'm also going to arrive at my own hypothesis and analysis since I've had time to think about my work and what happened with virtual work in the state of California. Virtual work is, I think, the contemporary term for telework. I focused on my, if you will, my creative energies on innovation, because telework is largely innovation, and I researched and developed, in fact, I teach a course part-time on innovation in government. The title, notably, is Innovation in Government is Not an Oxymoron, and I'm serious about that, because the study of innovation has largely to do with the study of change and organization development. This will get to your question in a moment. innovation in government is being gradually researched. It's not the sort of bandwagon that people jump on because it involves change, and change involves fear and other things that people don't necessarily do unless they have leadership. But innovation in government is largely being studied at the Harvard Ash School of Government. It's being led by a fellow by the name of Professor Borins, B-O-R-I-N-S, and John Kaminsky, K-A-M-I-N-S-K-Y. He's with the IBM. But basically, these two people have researched and created a study called the Ash Awards, and they're annual awards to innovators in government in North America. And you had, and I believe there's been some in South America where they've noted government making change. And one of the key indicators where innovation in government occurs, such as telework, is collaboration. Collaboration between the parties. That is necessarily getting to the messy work of spreading your dominoes with my dominoes, or whatever you want to call resources that they come from different places. And having, if you will, the patience and the courage to try to spread your resources to benefit somebody else. And as you've seen in various circular and other image diagrams, at some point, the resources come together, if you will, in that triangle among circles, where suddenly you have that, if you will, synergy, and the inertia takes place, and suddenly things start to work well. And that, to me, is a broad description of innovation in government. But it also involves understanding, trust, and culture. And I know this sounds broader than your question, but telework really involves, and virtual work, really involves the study of trust and leadership and collaboration in government, all part of what you call this big hat or this superstructure called culture. And you can walk into any organization, private or public, and I know, Fred, that you've had a lot of experience with organizations, and you can tell generally within 5 or 10 minutes, if you're talking with leadership and you're talking with staff, what kind of culture do they have? Are they fearful? Are they driven? Are they militaristic? Are they open? Heterogeneous? Do they have teamwork? Do they collaborate? You take organizations like Google. Google is a perfect example of an organization that has a culture of trust and willingness and collaboration. Unfortunately, government does not fit that model. So my next step, having been retired and having this head on my shoulders for 4 years and innovation, I start to look at where are we going in the future, and I see the millennials and younger people as the future of work and technology, and possibly of, if you will, teleworking and virtual work. It gets down to, and then I'll stop my speech here, it gets down to shifting values in the workplace in order to support innovation initiatives such as teleworking and work wherever you want, the knowledge worker, if you will. One of the interesting changes has been in childcare and fathers. It's no longer the mother staying at home and raising the children, particularly the baby. There have been changes in the laws. Now, suddenly you have fathers at home who used to be the breadwinners, right? Well, as you and I both know, that may or may not change with all families. The mother may go to work, or the mother may just go out on the golf course or enjoy herself, but dad is at home with the kids. Well, what happens if somebody at work calls dad and says, hey, you know what? You're working on this project, and we need your help. Well, he's got maybe a baby in his arms, or he's at the doctor's office with the child, but there's nothing to stop anybody at home from working. I think we both know that. And what I'm getting at is the world of virtual work is changing because the values and society is changing with the younger families. And with the younger families, you have these technology-energized workers, and I think it's going to all come together, if you will, where we start meshing. I talked about the triangle and the circles of values and efforts. And I think eventually, in fact, the millennials right now are demanding a more open workplace. So to answer your question, why the communities and why the state was not doing it, I think it was largely driven by the values at the time. The last 20 years have been, if you will, difficult. It's been conflict, a wrestling match. Say, for example, one of the, what I call the underground teleworking efforts I found at the state of California, two classes of workers in particular were, if you will, champion teleworkers. One of them was some certain legal organizations that asked not to be identified, and the second one was investigators. Now, investigators typically go out and they work in the field, and they're not in a cubicle. They're not in an office setting all the time, and they do, in fact, what you call virtual or telework, because, if you will, they're all over the state. The second group of people I noted were judges and attorneys and hearing officers. It was very interesting to notice that one agency had like a 90% telework participation all the way from staff up to the chief administrative judge were allowed to telework. I personally interviewed individuals at that organization, and I understand productivity was through the roof. People were working together, collaborating. I had one legal secretary describe to me that she had worked on the weekend at 2 a.m. in the morning to complete some work that had to be done for a case. You know, legal cases are driven by time and schedule. So there was an example of something working in the state that nobody had ever heard of. And when I wanted to, if you will, pronounce it and distribute it to teleworking colleagues, they asked me not to because of fear. The fear was there that if something like this was discovered at higher levels, they would shut it down. I can't tell you why, but there are a lot of what you call underground teleworkers in the state that want to keep it that way, and that is unfortunate.
Hmm. Well, it could be maybe what you're referring to earlier, that these state entities all have different cultures among them. They're not uniform, correct?
Mm-hmm. Now, I take a perfect case in, for example, health and public safety. You couldn't have an investigator or a peace officer. You couldn't have a firefighter suddenly deciding, particularly firefighting, make it silly, but to prove my point, you couldn't have a person that, if you will, was under command and control suddenly decided, oh, I'm going to be creative and step out of the fire lines and, you know, test some your hypothesis. No, there's certain, you're absolutely right. That culture is commanding control, and you can't have telework always there. You can have some of it, but you certainly can't have it, you know, in the midst of a fire or a crisis.
Mm-hmm.
But
didn't the Brown administration recognize recently what you were talking about, the shifting values, particularly the need to accommodate the millennials that are moving into the state workforce and moving into management positions? And I think they featured an interview. They allowed one of their cabinet level officials to be interviewed to speak on that very subject. Do you think there's some change that may be going on at the top levels of the state government with regards to that?
I sure hope so. I have met members of the governor's cabinet, both officially and unofficially, and I think there is the necessary leadership. But as I mentioned earlier, you have to have the leadership as well as the values as well as the resources in place. And, for example, I had the luxury of serving under Director Will Bush at the Department of General Services, who teleworked one day a week from his home in Elk Grove. Not a magnificent thing, if you will, but it showed as a leader that he was willing to demonstrate, if you will, walk the walk. And I have not seen that from the current administration. There's been some discussion of it, but if you will, I think that there could be more of a challenge necessary to these people to step out the circle, whatever that is, and demonstrate that they're teleworking like Director Bush was. Because as you know, when you have leadership, if you will, protecting your back, or however you want to put it, you're more comfortable as a person in an organization to try the same behavior. So leadership has always been necessary for change in any organization, And we can go through books and studies on this. It's not necessary. I think we can agree that leadership has to be there.
And lack thereof feeds into the fear you mentioned earlier, correct?
Correct. I've seen people, I'm not going to mention names, but when I was asked to resign or not work any further on a telework advisory group, ostensibly for other work, which was all was there, I was aware that the new leadership was in place, and so that particular leader did not accept it. That person was more conservative, if you will, and I understand. There have been some mistakes made. I heard of some horror stories about teleworking teams being sent out to do, if you will, projects located outside of their home office, and nothing happened. And when I inquired into that nothing happened circumstance, I was told, well, these people went out and they never reported back to me, this coming from the manager. And when I asked the manager further, well, who did they report to? Well, they reported to me. And then I followed up with the question of, well, did you have a communication structure in place to work with people outside of the office? And, well, of course not. It was none of my duty. These people had a responsibility to report back to me. There go the problem with leadership. You can expect leaders. You can hope they're there. But the leaders have to have, if you will, some training. And this is something Kate Lister, myself, and others describe in our training requirements that was part of the telework advisory group. You can't expect people to change overnight, particularly without the tools to do it. However, as Jay Tyberski and others in the state will tell you, there was a telework plan that was required by statute and policy in place in many of the agencies, not all of them. For example, I believe we discovered that about 11% of the state workforce was officially teleworking. Now, of those 11%, we had to have a telework plan, which is a document similar to any other document, such as a strategic plan, in place. But if you didn't have a telework plan in place, and you didn't have the necessary ingredients, who, why, what, when, and how, then, of course, managers were having, if you will, crashes or horror stories because they were asking people to work outside of the office as in telework, particularly in teams, but with no guidance. So to be fair to the leaders who could not make it work, it's necessary that you have a structure, a policy, and a document in place.
So part of it is it's management. It's just learning how to manage in a virtual environment is a new concept.
I'll admit, working from home as I do now, I'm doing some volunteers, consultant work to the educational institutions. I'll admit that working at home is not exactly a picnic. I'm sitting here among boxes and files. When I retired, I brought some of my documents home, my personal documents and records about my work history, and they were spread up all over the house. Well, immediately my wife said, no, just crap out of my living room. So everything was rearranged, but it requires a certain amount of discipline and organization, and that's not easy to do. So I recognize it, if you will, as a teleworker now, as a virtual worker, a knowledge worker, that you have to have your act together. But that can be accomplished.
Yeah, and then the office has traditionally provided a structure for that organization that you may not have when you're working virtually. You have to build that. You have to learn a new way of working, really, that you're able to be organized both inside the traditional office environment and outside of it, or maybe fully outside of it if you're fully a virtual worker, like some organizations I mentioned earlier are going to pure virtual models and saving the brick-and-mortar costs, which is like their second biggest budget item next to staff.
Yeah, and unfortunately, state agencies have set ways of doing facilities, and there's formulas, if you will, formulaic. And there is an industry out there that profits from any organization's space needs. But I think that industry, particularly if you look at that industry being, you know, office space and architects and engineers who are all involved, if you will, in structures and facility management, I think they understand, particularly the younger leaders in that industry, that people aren't going to, as I mentioned, the millennials, they're not, they don't want to necessarily go to an office, the door by 8:15, or we're going to dock you time. Hopefully that's gone, but I've seen some cases of it in the state, as you will, perhaps necessary for law enforcement and public safety. But outside of those reins, you have the industry that's pretty much in place, and that industry needs to change too, because as you know, it's not just the internal forces in an organization, it's the external forces, if you will, we, the voters and the taxpayers. And yes, I think the state can save a substantial amount of money if it were willing to change its facility policies and procedures.
Wasn't there, we were talking earlier about these telework policies. I remember looking at some of them, and they seemed to give discretion to the line manager to whether telework was going to happen or not, depending on the requirements of the particular work unit. It was pretty much left to the manager's discretion. It wasn't basically a policy that said, you have to figure out how to make this work. You have to adapt as the manager. We're going to leave it to your discretion that you can do this if it fits with the needs of your, the requirements of your work unit. And I think maybe because of what you pointed out earlier, that it requires change in management, it was easier just to say no to that rather than make the change in management and learn how to manage virtual staff. Would that be a fair statement?
Correct. Yeah, you can't expect or blame or otherwise create a new style of work and work behavior on managers that don't have any training or understanding. You're correct.
Yeah, and if you just basically said, okay, here it is, you can do this or not, but there's no guidance or no training, I mean, it is quite a leap, particularly if you've never done that before. I mean, you're going into the unknown, and you have people reporting to you, and there's, you know, I could see how that would create a lot of uncertainty for managers. But it's funny, we do have, in California, I have reviewed the documents, there is high-level policy that goes clear back to the, as you point out, to the late 80s, even put in statute in the mid-90s that encourages state entities to adopt telework. But if you don't have the management practice and training that goes with that, it's pretty darn hard to implement. You're going to get a lot of pushback, you know.
Well, it's going to be interesting to watch the state when the new administration arrives. I guess I'd be willing to lay probabilities that Gavin Newsom was going to be one of the candidates, and he seems to be, you know, part of that younger generation, particularly out of the Bay Area, particularly out of San Francisco, what I call techno-driven, and these are the people that are going to be leading the state. And I would be willing to throw off of that a newer governor with more trust in leadership is going to change the state of California. But the leaders have to be willing to demonstrate, such as Director Bush was, that they're going to actually try telework or knowledge work outside of the office. And it's going to be very critical rather than having, media interviews and newspaper stories that change is necessary and we have to shake things up. And that won't do it. As you know, as my mom used to say years ago, talk is cheap. People have got to act, but as you demonstrated in your earlier statements, we can't just talk about it and encourage it. The leaders have to be willing and knowledgeable that you're going to have to train the managers. You're going to have to change, if you will, the culture, the competencies in management. And you're also going to have to expect new workers. Now, I've been doing some research for some universities and colleges in the area that involve how do we train the new worker? How do we train the younger workers to work for state government? And one of the things we've discovered is what you call a knowledge gap. And part of this knowledge gap involves pretty basic skills. You're expecting young people to come out of universities and colleges and go into a work environment. But one of the skills, believe it or not, has to do with technology. Now, you would think that the generation that grew up on the games and all these platforms and softwares, very exciting. I've seen young people doing it, World of Warcraft, et cetera, have been wildly successful. And, by the way, made a lot of young people some pretty good money. You would think that that generation could go into the office and demonstrate technology. But I've also heard, here's the flip side of it, what you call a person, the being on a technology tourist. A technology tourist is a person who goes on a laptop or a PC or whatever, but they have no idea of the skills and software necessary to make that happen. And my point is that as well as requiring leadership and work anywhere workplace, virtual work, knowledge worker, we are going to have to require the state of California to have the type of expertise on hand that can assist the managers in driving home the point. The point of the new world of work.
Okay, so we have a technological challenge as well as a management challenge. This is all learning new things, and it takes a while.
Yeah, and one of the things that we were trying to do with the Telework Advisory Group, and we actually were arranging a tour of the some of the Silicon Valley organizations that were wildly successful at not only virtual work, but also the more open workplace, if you will, breaking down the cubicles and having work. I mentioned earlier architectural changes and facility design. This is going to have to be part of it, because when the workers come together, be they teleworkers or even full-time workers, I think that we're going to have to expect changes in how we design workplaces. And this is because the technology is there where people, for example, wireless. We all know that. You're going to have wireless speakers. You're going to have headsets. You no longer have to sit in front of a PC. You know, gosh, some of these handheld phones and that, they're approaching 12 inches in size. Mm-hmm. You know, people can sit around and lounge. One of the stories I like to tell is we had just hired some new people at the Department of General Services, younger people, and I was out in the back patio one day at the Ziggurat in West Sacramento, and I ran into a couple of young people, and I was glad they were aboard, and I asked them, well, how are things going? What were they doing? They said, excuse me, sir, I'm working on my email. I said, oh, you mean you're working on your job? And the young man said, yes, I am. And so here we have a personal workstation in the building costing upwards of $20,000 to equip and maintain. And yet we have a $500 or $600 handheld smartphone and a young person outside of the office doing his work, if you will, within 200 or 300 feet of his office, working outside because, hey, who wants to sit in a chair and stare at a screen when you can, you know, you can be outside and maybe a little bit of fresh air and check your email?
True. Yeah, and that the cubicle is a 1960s invention, or maybe even earlier.
And, you know, each cubicle, by the way, carries a price tag, at least at the time I was working, of around $10,000. Mm-hmm. And you add to that the cost. I think we did an analysis at the Department of General Services, the cost to equip and maintain each workplace is well over, including initial costs, is well over $20,000. So there you see, if you will, I was talking about the industry that supports the workplace has to change.
Hmm. Well, we're about out of time for today's podcast. Our guest today has been Jeff McLennan. Jeff, thank you very much.
Fred, it's a pleasure. Feel free to call me anytime.
Thank you.